County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. You're listening to Community Matters with a brand new host, Joan Rory, right here on WGTD 91.1, your gateway to public radio. Well, this is my very first show alone and with a special guest. We announced it last Saturday, Marcia, that I would become a new Community Matters host. And with the topic that we spoke about last Saturday on Community Matters, we talked about HALO, as I am the interim executive director. I thought it would be a good idea to follow up with the Kenosha side and the Kenosha voice with Shalom Center, the emergency shelter in Kenosha. So today, I have as my guest, Executive Director Tamara Coleman. Good morning, Tamara.
Good morning, Joan. How are you?
I'm great, and it's so excellent to have a conversation with you. The listening audience might think I'm trying to ask the questions for them to learn a lot, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm picking your brain for best practices and, the sharing of ideas. So really, this is an info-seeking session for me as well. So I really appreciate you coming on board.
Absolutely. I'm honored to be here. Anytime I can talk about the subject that I love, count me in.
Oh, well, and I know that about you, so I'm super happy to have you. Let's get first an introduction of yourself and what brought you here and your position at Shalom.
Absolutely. So, again, Tamara Coleman, I am the executive director of the Shalom Center. I've been at Shalom Center for 8 years, believe it or not. It's gone so fast. I started off as the director of programs and operations for about 2.5-3 years. Before I became interim executive director for a short period of time, becoming full executive director. And I have just enjoyed this journey thus far. Shalom Center has done some amazing things over the last several years, and I couldn't be prouder of the work that we're doing, but I would be naive to think that we're done doing any work. We have so much more to continue to do. And so I'm happy to be here today. I thank you for the opportunity to share about homelessness and about our community. We share so much with Racine and HALO. It's great to be able to continue this conversation.
Well, it is great on both parties. Are you a Kenosha native?
I am. Born and raised, aside from college, this has been my home, where me and my husband have raised 3 of our daughters who are now grown and gone, believe it or not. It's been crazy. I have one wonderful granddaughter. Her name is Milani. She's only 3, but she is the joy of my life. And I've been enjoying watching her grow. Family is very important to me. And so I have a very close niche family. We do a lot together. And I love to read. I don't have a lot of hobbies, but I love to read and sing, and I love music. So
it's hard to have hobbies when you're clocking a lot of hours. So
I try to read books that will help advance Shalom Center, obviously. But then I also, I just love leadership books. I love learning about different leadership styles and growing leaders. And I love that kind of stuff. That's kind of my thing, right? But I also love music. I love all types of music. So music is my happy place and my calming place. And I love the theater. So,
well, yeah. We definitely have that in common. Well, it makes sense. You're vested in your community and you want your community to, provide for that underserved population. So I totally get the passion behind that.
Yeah. I love my community.
Yeah, a couple of things, we started chatting a little bit about this last week, but the face of homelessness today, my own opinion is that it's very different, and I think many of our listeners might find it surprising to hear of a few folks that are in shelter. It's not a stereotypical homeless person anymore. Could you comment to that? What do you think about the current face of homelessness? And maybe define homelessness for the listeners.
Absolutely, John. Thank you for that question. Everyone has their own definition of homelessness, right? They really do. And what they think it looks like and what it should be. HUD, unfortunately, which we're, a lot of us are governed under, right? They have defined it as a person that is considered homeless if they lack fixed, regular, or adequate nighttime residence or live in a shelter or a place not meant for human habitation. And that last part is so key, a place not meant for human habitation. So if you're living in your car, in a tent in the park, on a park bench, in a field, anything that's not of human habitation is what HUD defines as homelessness. Now, there are several categories under homelessness, including like things that those who are about to lose their housing or individuals fleeing from domestic violence. But HUD defines a person that's homeless on those, under those three categories that I mentioned, lack of fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence, or living in a shelter or not for human habitation. And so I want to express that seriously, because when you couch surf and you may be living on each of your family members' couches or your friends' couches, those, we call them couch surfers, they're not defined homeless by HUD definition. But to us, you know, we think, oh my God, but they're homeless. Well, HUD would say they're not, because right, they have a place over their head. Kind of weird, but I wanted to really just share that, because I think people lose that definition a little bit, not understanding what homelessness really is defined as. Now, the face of homelessness, I mean, Joan, it's evolved significantly over the past decade. It's very broad, much broader now. And I think if I can just give you like just three quick demographic shifts that I've seen in homelessness. Perfect. So traditionally, homelessness was often associated with single men, particularly those struggling with substance abuse or mental illness. I feel like today we're seeing much more families with children represented, and they're, oops, sorry, I know your
life happens.
let me blank that off a little bit. Sorry about that. I'm going to start over that little segment just so for editing purposes for you. The face of homelessness has evolved significantly over the past decade, and it's much broader. It looks a little bit different than what we traditionally have seen. So homelessness was often associated with single men, particularly those struggling with substance abuse or mental illness. Today, we're seeing families with children represented much more. That's the growing segment of homeless population. The rise in family homelessness, I think, is linked to economic factors such as lack of affordable housing, job loss, and the rising cost of just living. And then, in addition to families, we're seeing youth like never before. There's been an increase in youth experiencing homelessness, and that youth age group for homelessness is between 17 and 24. Mm. And it's often due to like family conflict and like issues like gender identity, sexual orientation, involvement of kids in foster care system, all of that. And so again, additional to the families and children, we're seeing a lot of youth. And then more and more, we're seeing elderly homelessness. This is that aging population that are like 55, 60 and older. And we're seeing them not only in the homeless system, but they're facing homelessness. And many are unable to afford where they're living on their fixed income. And some are experiencing homelessness for the first time, even at their age. And so those, to me, would be the new faces of homelessness that we are seeing evolve.
Wow, that's really alarming, and I can echo what you're saying because I see it. I think we have 9 families in shelter today.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
we have eight right now, yeah.
Wow, definitely the older population. Yeah. We're finding people that, you know, we have wheelchairs, walkers, definitely the elder population, and again, that younger population, that exact same age demographic. So, yep, we're feeling it the same in Racine at Halo.
Yeah.
You brought up a couple of points about addiction and mental illness. And I didn't put this in the questions that I had for you just to start thinking about, but Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing at Shalom in the mental health and the addiction realm. How are you, what are you seeing? How do you handle that? Give me your insight on that.
Sure. So we treat addiction just like we would do a disease, right? Addiction is a disease. And so we don't treat it any different than if you were to walk in here and you had cancer and you were homeless, or if you were a diabetic, or, you know, or you had high blood pressure. We treat it as it is just what it is. It is a disease. So we try to meet each and every individual person where they are, and we try to get them to their next best place. So as you know, Joan, we're seeing a lot of, and we always have, undiagnosed, untreated mental health or substance abuse disorder that has been untreated, undiagnosed. Many times they don't even recognize that they have these issues or these diseases. And so we have a full case management of staff. We're working with our community partners, ensuring that we're getting them the treatment and the support that they need. It's kind of unfortunate Kenosha County does not have a mental health hospital. We have plenty of stabilization locations, right? The Care Center, Lake Behavioral Health, who we're now a partner with. But we don't have any serious stabilization of a long-term solution for individuals. And unfortunately, a person getting stabilized for 3 to 4 days or 7 days is just not long enough.
Right.
When you've gone maybe 30 years or 15 years, even 5 years of being untreated, undiagnosed, you can't stabilize someone in 7 days. Statistics will tell you that. And so, and in order for us to get someone, you know, chaptered, it takes this long, drawn out, you know, process. And so it has not been really helpful for Kenosha County not to have beds that are for mental health treatment or even substance abuse. We have a lot of programs. We have a lot of great programs that are doing the best that they can. But Kenosha County really needs a mental health facility that's long-term. And I think that would help with a lot. But we have case managers on site. We do not kick people out for coming in under the influence. We do not. Because, again, we're not going to kick you out if you have cancer. It is a disease, right?
Right.
You cannot use drugs or alcohol on property. But if you're here and you left for the day and you come back under the influence or your mental health is not where it needs to be, we're going to try to work with you and de-escalate those circumstances so that we can keep you in shelter, because we know what the alternative is. You're back on the street.
Right.
So we do everything in our power, and we have great staff and great community partners that are helping us on this journey.
And I think it should be noted, too, that this situation is not unique to Kenosha or Racine. It's a national issue.
Excellent.
Mental health providers are not, I don't know if it's the growing need for mental health being addressed and diagnosed, or if it's, you know, just a matter of not enough mental health professionals entering the profession. I don't know what that answer is.
Yeah. I know that there's a shortage of nurses, right? We read about that all the time. And
Rush.
I'm sure there's a shortage of just about everything, right? And so I'm sure there's a shortage. But we gotta keep pushing. We gotta keep moving.
Right.
We keep doing something.
Exactly. A southeastern Wisconsin facility that would be amazing. But the fact is, the resources are very slim right now.
Absolutely.
In mental health care.
Yep.
Yeah. And that does present a challenge. And so I think I'm going to toss this one at you. What could you list as a few challenges you face as the emergency homeless shelter in Kenosha? Give me an example of a few challenges you're facing.
Well, I will tell you, the main challenge right now that we're facing is we have individuals that are in shelter who are working, they're doing great, they're thriving, but we cannot find accessible, affordable housing.
Mm.
That is our biggest, number one, I think, challenge right now, is we have people that are ready to go and we have nowhere for them to go. And they're working in Kenosha, so they may be using public transportation, and we are finding affordable units in other locations. For instance, Racine. or even Lake County right over the border in like Wadsworth or Zion, which does not help them with their working situation because they need the public transportation to get to work.
Sure.
And so if we're moving them out of their you know, work area, how do they get to work? And so it's becoming more and more of a challenge to keep people that are ready to go in Kenosha because we just are really struggling with finding the units that we need. And I think our second biggest challenge would be those that are needing rental assistance in our community that there are not homeless. So there's a prevention thing here that we're dealing with, trying to get them to stay out of the homeless system. And so they're calling, looking for rental assistance. There hardly isn't any.
Right.
Because the prevention dollars don't look pretty, right? That's not something that a lot of people want to fund. But if we can keep people out of the rental, out of the homeless system, and try to support them before they become homeless, it would make my job a lot easier.
Right. And isn't our job to try to work us out of a job? I mean,
yeah.
I say that, and sometimes it doesn't make sense to many people, but boy, I wish there was a day where we didn't need a homeless shelter. But in the meantime, the reality is we have them. We need to support them from a community standpoint. And yeah, the same challenges you're talking about are the same challenges we face.
Yeah.
You know, finding a place is one thing, finding a safe, affordable, clean, you know, abode is another. So, boy, it hurts to hear that you are even having to look in those neighboring communities because we're so slim. So, you know, there's only so many places.
And there's only so many places. And those are just like the immediate needs, right? I mean, overall, we have a very complex overlapping needs with our clients, right? And we already talked about some of them. And so just addressing those require a multidisciplinary approach, which, you know, it could be resource intensive. And so even just dealing with, you know, them trying to move out and be on their own and be sustainable, we have all these internal things that are going on, right? Like limited resources and just trying to find, you know, funding to even keep things going, and government grants and donations are all, you know, are kind of becoming insufficient. They're low, they're decreasing every time you write for a grant, right? Or write for assistance. And so it's like a perfect storm that's happening all at the same time, but you're trying to stay positive. You're trying to ensure that the resources are available for our clients because they come first, and making sure that they're set up for success.
Well, you said that big F word, and that is one of the biggest challenges, the funding.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You're right. And in our community, there's only so many pockets, and I think 450 nonprofits are registered in Racine County. That's a lot of organizations seeking funding, likely, and only so many pockets to dig from. But I really want to reiterate what you said. It's not enough. The grants, the private donations, increased costs everywhere for everything. It's not enough.
It isn't. And, you know, we are very community driven. We could not do this work without our community. And so we're very grateful for all of the resources that our community funnels through our agency. It's the fuel that helps us continue to move forward. And I don't know, you know, you don't want to keep taxing your community, but it's like, if we don't have them, we struggle. And we recently, Joan, I'm not even sure if you know this, maybe you do know, we opened up a community resource center. It's our Hope Hub back in March. And through an anonymous donor, we were able to add another service to a population that is not always getting the service that they need, which is our unsheltered. So those are the people that are living on the streets that either due to the overcrowding of shelters or because they choose to, I mean, there's an array of reasons, right? And so we have opened up our doors and have a community resource center now that allows for showers, washers and dryers. They can come in and get food and charge their phone, look on the computer, get connected to services. We have case managers on site to help navigate them through the system, through a holistic approach, in a very client-centered approach. And then also with housing case managers and housing navigators on site to help them navigate to get rehoused in some way, shape, or form. So that happened in March. And although we had an amazing donor that, you know, helped us build that and took care of that piece, there's still an operational fund that comes with that, right? We still have to operate it. And so to your point, it's the big F, right? And it's, for me, it's the big L too, limited. So it's the L, limited funds, right? That we just, you know, have to find different ways to fuel that. And as you said, with all these agencies and everyone's doing great work, it does become challenging.
Sure. With that, I'm going to take a quick break to just say you're listening to Community Matters. Today is host is Joan Rory with guest Tamara Coleman of the Shalom Center in Kenosha. And you're listening to WGTD 91.1 FM, your gateway to public radio. Tamara, we were talking about challenges, and you did give a big shout out to your community. And I also want to give a shout out to Esther, who's part of your hub, the Hope Project, or the, what was it called?
It's our Hope Hub. It's our community resource center.
Hub, right. She's amazing. What an asset. Super excited for her in this role. So we were talking about challenges, but you did throw out something to the community, the big ask. How can your community support you, assist you? Let's dream big here, maybe narrow it down a little, but how can me as a resident of a nearby community help you, support you?
Well, my goodness, I could be talking about this for the remainder of the show.
Go ahead. No.
I believe, you know, our community plays a pivotal role and a vital role in supporting homeless shelter, contributing to the shelter's ability to provide all of our essential needs, right, especially to those in need. I think it's a huge approach, right? So let's start with volunteering their time and skills, right? We are always looking for volunteers. We cannot do this work without volunteers. We just can't. Our budget will not hold. So volunteering in our shelter, volunteering in our soup kitchen or our pantry, because all of those programs funnel through our shelter.
Sure.
If you have professional skills like marketing, right, all those fun, creative areas that nonprofits can't really fund for, right? We our funding goes to the programming. So is there time for marketing? Absolutely not. Even helping write a grant, you know, any professional service. So again, volunteering your time. And then of course, in-kind donations, donating goods such as non-perishable food items, toiletries, clothing, blankets, sleeping bags. You know, our needs list, just like Halos and Women's and Children's Horizon, they're all on their websites, right? Go to them, find out what their essential needs are, and help. Just donate. And so then again, that's the, you know, volunteering your time and skills, and then in-kind donations. And then the big one is financial support. When we write grants, Joan, and you know this, a lot of our grants are restricted, right? You have
right.
to particular thing. Giving financial donations from our community is wonderful, and they're unrestricted. And they allow us to use them for other programming opportunities. And so financial contributions are the most flexible and impactful way to support a homeless shelter. And they help us with operating costs, purchasing supplies, and then, of course, expanding our services. Put on a fundraiser, right? Those are, you can do all of those things, a charity walk, benefit dinners. I mean, I can go on and on. Put on a fundraiser for a food drive, all of those great things. And then also advocacy and awareness. I think it's so important that community members understand homelessness. That's why I love that you're doing this show, Joan, so that we can educate people on what homelessness looks like and what is needed in homelessness, because it brings awareness. And then, of course, you know, advocating for change and advocating for accessible, affordable housing, advocate for more case management dollars at the federal level. And you're supporting local, state, and federal policies that address the root causes of homelessness. And so, And it goes beyond just a shelter. It's about mental health services. It's about living wages. And then, again, all of that creates a long-term solution. I could go on.
Yeah.
I could go on because there's so much stuff people can do. And if they don't know what they can do, I think calling the agency and talking to maybe Joan, you and I, you know, or over at Children's Yvonne, talk to us and find out what is it that you need. Because sometimes, you know, working together as thought partners could create a great, great lasting relationship.
How about giving us a way to reach out to you, like your phone number, the website, et cetera? This is a good time to pitch how we can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. So they can visit our website at shalomcenter.org, and you can find out all of our information there. And then me directly, you can contact our office at 262-658-1713. I'm happy to meet with you. We can sit down. I'm happy to, you know, show you the program, and you can get an idea of what we're looking for and help in any way, shape, or form. That's what we're here for. And I know that together we can do this.
Well, this is something I've dreamt of saying on a radio someday. Tamara, that number again?
Is 262-658-1713. And again, our website is www.shalomcenter.org.
Well, I can cross that off my bucket list. Thank you. Okay, we talked about a few challenges. How about some success stories, or what's putting a little leap in your step these days? How about some success stories?
You know what? Absolutely. You know, I thought about this a little bit, and there's so many, because I think that when we talk about homelessness, we always talk about the individual with the addiction or the individual that has mental illness. And that's not always the face of homelessness. Sometimes it's, I didn't save enough money and I got evicted. So I got, you know, laid off from my job and I found myself in a homeless situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no mental health challenges. They have no addiction challenges. They just lost their job and became homeless. I think what fuels me every day is being able to get up and make a difference in someone's life every single day. And I get to see the fruits of our labor as service providers each and every day. But I am reminded of one situation. So I mentioned earlier, we opened our Hope Hub in March. Back in January, we did our point in time. And if you don't know what a point in time is, it is when service providers that deal with homelessness go out into the community for their service count. And we intentionally look for people that are living on the street to try to bring them resources, to try to bring them into shelter, get them off the streets. And so in January, during our point in time, there was a gentleman that we already knew was homeless, had been homeless for probably about 2 or 3 years living on the street. We had encountered him several times, but this particular time was in January, and we were telling him that, you know, you're getting older, it's cold, come on into shelter, you know, all those things that we try to persuade them into coming into shelter. He said no every time, nope, nope, nope. In March, Joan, when we opened our Hope Hub, we were still going to an area that we knew homeless individuals kind of congregated and bringing them resources. And we ran across our friend that we had saw in January. And we told him that the Hope Hub was open. There were showers. Come take showers. You know, they wash your clothes. He came. Joan, he came for 2 days straight to get food. We were able to build a little bit of a relationship with him in those 2 days. And by the third day, for the first time in 2 years, he came into shelter.
Well,
and this was one that didn't want shelter, right? So that's why I tell people, some people don't want shelter at that moment, but that doesn't mean that we don't keep trying. So he was able to come in a shelter, and we're now working with him, getting his meds that he needs. He's a diabetic, so we're getting him stabilized in that way on his medical side. He's doing great. He found a job. I mean, and so to see him transform in just this short period of time, but we've known about his homelessness for 2 or 3 years, has been very, very rewarding to us. And so it's stories like that that we could just keep telling as homeless providers, that it's not always the gloom and doom and the sadness. It's also joy and excitement, and it's rewarding and it's refreshing to see people that don't want help find trust and faith in the system and then want help, and then now they're progressing very well.
Okay, I have one correction. Are they finding faith in the system, or are they finding faith in the fact that you're building relationships with them? I mean, you're representing the system. We know the system. It's not a friendly place for anyone.
It's not a friendly place. You're absolutely right. But I think if you can get hope and have a little hope in the system and help allow some people to help you navigate through the system and be that partner with you to navigate through the system, it can be a scary place, right? And even though we know that it may not be easy or beneficial for some, and we won't go down that conversation, but if you have someone walking alongside you that understands that, you don't have to carry that burden alone and help you navigate through those barriers. You don't have to go through it alone. And so that's why I'm so appreciative of our staff and the Hope Hub who are walking alongside these individuals, that we're not just sending them out there to say, okay, now go do that, go do this, go this. We're actually walking alongside. And I think that brings some hope. It brings some relationship building. It brings some trust. It also brings some transparency that, I might have a problem and I might need some extra help and support. And it's okay. I think having that person walk alongside you is really critical.
Those are incredible words, and what a mission that you're serving as servant leaders. You're really impressing me. I love how you're describing that. A second success story you can come up with?
I absolutely can. So several years ago, we had a gentleman who showed up at our door at 18 years old. He was a senior in high school at one of our local high schools. Living with his grandmother, she had passed away. He had about maybe $200 on him in a duffel bag. And he came into our shelter as a grown man now, right? We could not get him into the youth homeless area. They were full. We kept him here in shelter. It was about March or April when he came into shelter. We assured that young man graduated from high school. Several of us attended his high school graduation. He got a job and worked double overtime at one of our manufacturing companies here in Kenosha. We were very proud of him. We became his family. He stayed in shelter for a little bit longer than probably we would have liked, but we needed to make sure he was sustainable. He's only 18 years old. Like I said, worked double shifts here, was doing what he needed to do. And in September of that same year, for the first time in his life, he had an apartment that we helped him get. And he was able to be on his own at 19 years old for the first time in his entire life with no family support. And he was sustaining that. Joan, that was about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman still comes to this day to volunteer and support us. He's still working at the same company. He's been promoted twice. And he is doing wonderful. And I just think about often, every time I see him, actually, not often, but when I see him, I always think about, what if we were not here? What if the Shalom Center was not here for him? Or what if we were full that night when he showed up at our door with just a duffel bag and a couple of $100 in his pocket with nowhere to go? What would have happened to that young man? And I don't even want to think about it anymore. I'm very glad that he showed up and we were able to take him. But then I also I'm not naive to think about the ones that do show up that we can't take. And so what does that look like for them? And how can we continue to support them on their journey? Which is why our Hope Hub is so important to me, because they have a place to come and have a place to shower and get food and resources on their journey as well, get job placements. We've done job fairs and we have medical wellness folks coming in and checking on them. So there's so much more work that needs to be done. There's so much more we need to be doing. And I think the success stories and people like the two gentlemen that I've mentioned help fuel me and fuel our agency and fuel my staff to just keep pushing and keep going and keep moving down that path.
Right, because tomorrow might bring the need to say, I'm sorry, we don't have a bed for you, you know? And that is by far the most difficult, the hardest, painful part of this job.
It is.
Is to have to say to someone, we cannot take you in. And I don't know what Shalom's, how often you're at full capacity, Halo's at full capacity on a daily basis. And we do refer to each other, I know, because
we do.
Yeah, you know, you just stand there heartbroken, and the first thing I think of is, I'm calling Shalom to see if they have a bed, you know, and so, boy, incredible words, incredible vision. And when you said that young man did not have family support, he surely does now.
He does, and it's wonderful to see him, and he's kind of grown into a man now, you know.
Right.
Facial hair, we kind of laugh at him, you know, like, oh, he's got a beard, you know. But we have become his extended family, and he comes and visits. And, you know, it's, and we do refer, we do share, and, you know, but we do know, we're always full, just like Halo. We are full every night. We were an 82-bed facility, and we are always full. And have I thought about, you know, expanding and growing? And I don't know. Financially, no, I can't.
Right.
You know, your financial constraints really stop you from doing more, you know. But we just keep pushing. We just keep going. We keep doing what we can. We keep referring. We keep calling other shelters. We call PADS in Lake County. We'll call, you know, missions in Milwaukee. We will try to find a place for you to go, because our goal is for you not to be on the streets.
Exactly. You've been listing or mentioning a couple of services that the Shalom Center offers. How about a comprehensive list, or if you could just rattle off the services that you know Shalom Center offers? I heard medical visits. I heard case managers. What types of services are offered under the Shalom umbrella?
Sure. So we have really two different programs. One is our shelter, which we've been talking about a lot. And our shelter program has two components, singles and then families. And then we have full case management. We have an array of classes that are available to all of our residents in shelter. And so that looks like rent smart or rent basic classes. Mm-hmm. We want them to be good tenants and understand that they have to advocate for themselves as well. Budgeting classes, AA, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, so we have NANAA.
Right.
We have a Bible study that comes in. We have enrichment classes. We have empowerment classes. We have food nutrition classes. I can go on. We have parenting classes. I can go on and on. And that's all provided by either our staff or community partners coming in and offering those services. And so that's kind of our shelter and the makeup. And we do have housing case managers and housing navigators. You mentioned Esther Roberts earlier and Malik Bayou. Those are both of our housing team, and they're doing great work here and making sure people have a sustainable plan to get out. And then they're kind of passed off to that housing person to navigate the outside world, as we would say it. And then our food program is our other program. We are the largest food pantry and food distribution center in Kenosha County. We serve about 11,500 unduplicated households a year out of our food pantry. And those are people that are struggling and trying to supplement their income with food services, and we're able to provide free groceries to them. And then our other food program is our soup kitchen, and we are the longest running soup kitchen in Kenosha County. We are very proud of that. We serve every night. And in 42 years, Joan, we have never missed a meal. We serve in rain, hail, sleet, or snow. And if two people come in that snowstorm, we will be there to serve those two people that come in to get dinner. It's every night, 5 to 6, and we have two different locations in our community that we serve in to ensure that we're maximizing the reach and that people can get access to healthy, nutritional food and dinner each and every night. So those are kind of our two programs, shelter and food. And then, of course, our new one, which is our Hope Hub Community Resource Center, which is serving our unsheltered folks.
I had the joy of arriving at Shalom about a month or two ago on a day that the food pantry, I think, was distributing. It looked like the busiest runway at O'Hare.
Yeah, it gets pretty busy on 39th Avenue. It's funny that people don't know what's going on here, and sometimes they'll call and say, hi, I was on my way to work and I saw the line. Is everything okay? Is there something that we eat? I'm like,
oh my gosh,
it's pantry day.
Yeah, it was impressive. It looked like a well-oiled machine, and I was very impressed to see
thank you.
How well you were serving.
Yeah, we really have You can order online now, and so a lot of those lines that people see, it goes pretty fast. You can order online, and just like an Instacart, or if you're ordering from Walmart or Meijer, you can do your selection, and then you can come at your designated time and date and pick up your food. It's real quick and easy.
No excuses. There's no reason not to be a part of that.
No, and we want to be able to make sure that we're not providing you food that you're not going to use. So it helps us keep down on waste, but then also allows us to serve more people and more efficiently. So we love that.
Incredible. Thank you for everything that you offer. You know, one of the questions I thought of was, what does the community need to know about Shalom? And you just kind of gave us a commercial. But is there anything hanging that you think the community needs to know about Shalom?
No, just continue to support us. We need our community. We cannot do this work alone. Several years ago, Joe and I wrote an article for the Kenosha News as a guest commentator, and I put in the word community. And when you look at the word community and the ending word unity,
right,
is you and I. And people laugh about that, and they can laugh, but honestly, our community does not thrive unless you and I are working together. And so, and I don't care what area it is. I don't care if it's education. I don't care if it's, you know, mental health or whatever it is. We can't do this work without you and I. And so it's important that we work together. So, again, I like to say you and I have to work together, just like Halo and I have to work together. And so without our support, without their support, we don't do this work. And then our community is impacted, and they fail.
Well, I want to give a visual because tomorrow you're coming from Shalom Center, and behind you there are pictures, or there's signs, and one says, don't give up, and the other says, we're all in this together. I'm incredibly honored to have this time to have a conversation with you, learn from you, share with you. We need to continue this narrative and work together. We're all in this together. I'm going to reiterate how incredibly important it is for the community to know unrestricted financial donations are the number one on our wish list. So please take a look at what you might be able to offer and chime in with Shalom Center and be as generous as you can. Thank you, Tamara. One last shout out to how they can reach you, your phone number and website.
Absolutely. And thank you, Joan, for this opportunity. And so, yes, our website is www.shalomcenter.org. And our phone number is 262-658-1713. And we look forward to continuing to serve you.
Let's get you 10 new contacts. Let's put a goal out there for 10 people to call or contact Shalom.
I love that. I love goals. I like challenges too, Joan.
I know you do. We're in the right careers. Thank you so much today for listening to Community Matters with Tamara Coleman of the Shalom Center. You're listening to Community Matters on WGTD 91.1 FM, your gateway to public radio.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Gregory Berg. The studios of WGTD will be closed Monday because of Labor Day, so there will be no morning show broadcast, but there will be a morning show podcast. An interview from 2008 with John Warren Monroe, author of a fascinating book called Laboratories of Faith, Mesmerism, Spiritism, and Occultism in Modern France. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg, available wherever you get your podcasts.
In a world filled with possibilities and wonder, we can always find grace in between the music. Join me, Lily Maselli, host of In Between the Music, and enjoy trivia and music together. For dates and times, visit WGTD.org.
WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine.